our kids who are in school right now will never get another chance for this. This is it. This is the only time to fund these kids.
Parents rally on the Capitol steps for increased education funding. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Friday, April 4th. Good evening. I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, lawmakers decide to take up a bill to raise the minimum wage.
It's such a bold-faced attempt to circumvent the will of the people.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station. If you're ready to quit tobacco or just thinking about it, the coaches at Alaska's Tobacco Quit Line, a free service for all Alaska adults, can support you with Text to Quit, with tools to make your quit attempt successful. Text to Quit helps you stay in touch with your quit coach, use nicotine replacement medications properly, manage those urges to use tobacco, and prevent relapses, all from your mobile phone. Call 1-800-QUIT-NOW. This message sponsored by the Alaska Tobacco Control Alliance.
The Alaska State House has delayed its vote on an omnibus education bill until Monday, giving lawmakers more time to wrestle with questions over teacher retirement policy and treatment of rural schools. But even though debate on the bill was delayed, that did not stop a group of parents from gathering on the Capitol steps to rally for more education funding. APRN's Alexandra Gutierrez reports.
For the past week, there have been a lot of parents running around the state capitol letting their legislators know they want more money put into education. They've united under the name Great Alaska Schools, and they describe themselves as a coalition of 1,500 families that support the public system. On Friday, they stopped going door to door and went out into the street instead. They had one message.
BSA! Rave today!
Kat Coward is a physical therapist, a jazz singer, and a mom to an 8th grade student at Romig Middle School in Anchorage. She flew down for the Juneau rally because she has seen changes in the quality of education at Romig as the budget has been constrained.
They're losing counselors there. Class sizes are increasing.
Coward says the proposals that have gotten traction in the legislature don't do enough to offset the cut she's seeing. The bill that the House is considering bumps the base student allocation, or the amount of money schools get per kid, to $200. Coward believes they should double that. She says that kind of increase to the base student allocation amounts to a little more than 1% of the overall budget.
Our kids who are in school right now will never get another chance for this. This is it. This is the only time to fund these kids. You know, we can put money at other capital projects or other things later, but we can never invest in these children ever again.
To illustrate their point, Great Alaska Schools brought plenty of pie to their demonstration to symbolize that they just want a larger cut of the fiscal one. There was blueberry, apple, you name it. And when the rally was over, Coward and other participants dropped off slices to their legislators in hopes that it would sweeten them up before Monday. In Juneau, I'm Alexandra Gutierrez.
A bill that could supplant the minimum wage initiative has popped up in the legislature. The House Rules Committee introduced the bill on today, and it's modeled after a citizens' initiative that's slated to appear on the August primary ballot. It would raise the minimum wage up from $7.75 to $9.75 over the course of 2 years, and it would peg the minimum wage to inflation. If the bill is enacted into law, it would make the citizens' initiative moot and remove the question from the ballot. Organizers strongly oppose any effort to preempt their initiative. Out of concern, the legislature might try to water it down. When a different minimum wage initiative was introduced in 2002, the legislature passed a similar bill to keep it from getting on the ballot. A year later, lawmakers came back and stripped the inflation component. Ed Flanagan, an initiative sponsor and former labor commissioner, says he's worried the same tactic could be used again.
It's not like we didn't see it coming, but I guess you still hope that people will have, you know, some sense of, I don't know what you call it, shame for anything else. It's such a bold-faced attempt to circumvent the will of the people.
If a new minimum wage law is enacted through the ballot, legislators may not touch it for 2 years. The bill is scheduled to be heard by the House Labor and Commerce Committee on Wednesday. A controversial permitting bill has been sentenced to die in committee. Senate Resources Chair Kathy Geisel sent out a press release yesterday announcing the Resources Committee would not hold any more hearings on HB 77. Committee member Peter Michicki says that with the end of the session looming, the bill was simply too complex and too polarizing to advance.
Some people will be very happy, some people won't be as happy, but I think everyone can agree that we can, in the future, do a better job working together on releasing things that people see as an effect on their everyday lives, their rights as Alaskans, their right to be heard.
The Parnell administration introduced HB 77 last year. The bill was pitched as a way to make the permitting process more efficient, and it initially zipped through the legislature. But fishing groups, tribal organizations, and environmental outfits came out strongly against the legislation, arguing it gave too much power to the Natural Resources Commissioner and limited the public's role in permitting decisions. A land access dispute that threatened to delay progress on the Susitna-Wautana hydroelectric project has been resolved, though the agreement has come later than expected. This afternoon, the Alaska Energy Authority issued a press release stating that a complex land access permit had been reached between AEA, six Cook Inlet Village Corporations, and Cook Inlet Region Incorporated to allow access to Alaska Native-owned land that is in the study area for the proposed mega project. Over the past 2 years, discussions over land access had been ongoing and were occasionally complicated by allegations of trespassing by contractors hired by AEA. Details of the deal were not immediately available. The agreement could have an impact on funding for the Susitna-Wautana project this year. Governor Sean Parnell has asked the Alaska legislature for $32.7 million supplement for the current fiscal year. More than 550 military personnel from around the country are gathered at the port of Anchorage this week for an Alaska Shield exercise meant to test the readiness of the military to provide emergency support to areas impacted by natural or human-caused disasters. APRN intern Jolene Elmendarez has the story.
The Joint Logistics Over the Shore, or JLOTS training, used sources from the Army, Navy, and Coast Guard to simulate the circumstances that would be present if the port of Anchorage were inoperable. The annual training, which took place in South Korea last year, is happening in Anchorage as part of a commemoration of the 50th anniversary of the 1964 Great Alaska Earthquake. Mayor Dan Sullivan says the collaboration between Alaska Shield and JLOTS ensures that Alaska will be ready if disaster strikes again.
Over 90% of all the consumer goods come through the port of Anchorage, and of course we're a strategic military port, one of 19 in the nation.
The Army's largest vessel, the Staff Sergeant Robert T. Kuruta, sailed in from Hawaii for the training. Army Major Teresa Armstrong explains how shipping containers of food, medical supplies, and other necessary items would be unloaded from boats to the shore.
We have what's called a large, medium roll-on, roll-off vehicle, so we don't even have to come to port. We have a floating pier that comes up alongside of it, or this vessel itself, whether the crane is on the port or whether it's out being anchored offshore. That it can lift up those containers and put them on a rolling pier, and that rolling pier can come up. So it can come up right directly onto shore. We don't have to have any pier or any equipment otherwise. We can do it all self-sustaining.
Army Lieutenant Colonel Carl Linderman says another element of the training involves the organization of materials on the vessels. During a disaster, local and state officials would request items needed most, and the military would be responsible for ensuring they're organized enough to get those materials to shore quickly.
Think of it like ordering something on Amazon. You want to track your package? That's our operation with these containers. So we're able to figure out what's on the ship, what we want to bring ashore. Once it's ashore, if you look over at the base of the hill there, we're staging the containers over there by commodity.
While the training focused on the port, other training exercises that take place throughout the year ensure the military is also prepared to help distribute aid throughout the state. Troops will continue with the training through April 5th. Linderman says the simulation will wrap up when JLOTS and Alaska Shield participants can ensure they would be able to restore basic port capabilities. In Anchorage, I'm Jolene Almendarez.
Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, a book club brings together residents at a Juneau homeless shelter.
That's kind of their forum down there. Other the people who run the place. Up here, it's ours. Okay? It's ours. This is our club.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by Doyon Limited, Interior Alaska's regional native corporation, providing oil field services, government contracting, and natural resource development in Alaska and across the nation. Information at doyon.com. And by the law firm of Landy Bennett Blumstein, attorneys who know the people, businesses, tribes, and communities of Alaska. Landy Bennett Blumstein, online at lbblawyers.com.
The U.S. Senate yesterday ratified two international treaties that Alaska senators say will help crack down on illegal international fishing. One is an agreement to restrict ships from using ports if they engage in what's known as IUU fishing. Senator Mark Begich says the practice robs legitimate fishermen of some $23 billion a year.
I know lots of times we talk about illegal, unreported, unregulated. I like to simply call it just pirate fishing. These are people who steal our fish out of our waters and then try to sell them back to us.
A second treaty would create an international organization to regulate fishing in international waters of the North Pacific to protect fish habitat. Senator Lisa Murkowski calls it essential.
Critically important when it comes to our fisheries and our sustainability of our fisheries and how we manage our fisheries. We're trying to play by the rules. We expect others to be doing the same.
The treaties were approved by voice vote. The state of Alaska is continuing to fight the federal government over control of navigable waters in two cases involving interior rivers. The Alaska Department of Law has filed a friend of the court brief in support of Central resident Jim Wild's latest appeal. Wild is contesting the National Park Service's authority to enforce regulations on the state-owned Yukon River inside the Yukon-Charley River's National Preserve. State Senior Assistant Attorney General Ann Nelson says the state has tracked the case from its start in 2010.
The state's position is that the Park Service doesn't have the authority to regulate navigable waters within national parks as if they were part of the national park. And so we've filed these amicus briefs to keep that issue in front of the court.
In December, a federal judge upheld Jim Wild's conviction of misdemeanor offenses for resisting National Park Service rangers who pulled him over for a boat safety inspection in September 2010. Wild's appeal is one of two challenging the federal agency that the state of Alaska is involved in. Federal judges have repeatedly rejected the state's arguments in both cases, and this week the U.S. Supreme Court refused to consider Alaska's appeal concerning similar issues in the Katie John subsistence case. The state's Nelson says the case frames the Wild and Sturgeon appeals under the Alaska National Interest Lands Conservation Act.
What it means is that we are continuing to work with the status quo, which is the Ninth Circuit's ruling that certain navigable waters are considered public lands under ANILCA because the federal government has a reserved water right in them for purposes of administering the ANILCA's rural subsistence priority.
Nelson says the state's focus in the Wild and Sturgeon cases is on challenging the extent of Park Service authority over navigable waters inside parks. The state just filed its brief in the Wild case. Briefs are due in the Sturgeon case by the end of the month. Both appeals are before the federal Ninth Circuit Court. It's crisp, crunchy, and salty. It is a traditional Southeast Alaskan delicacy that signals spring as surely as a warm, sunny day. But as KCAW's Emily Foreman discovered, gathering herring eggs on hemlock branches is about a lot more than food.
A&B Harbor, stall 10, small boat on the left. That's Chuck Miller's response to anyone looking for herring eggs. Miller has the means to harvest this traditional food in a traditional way, so sharing the resource is a no-brainer.
Food tastes better when you share it with people, and it does, and that's the way our people, our native people here are, the Tlingit people.
Like many subsistence fishermen, Miller practices the row-on-hemlock harvesting method. He invited me to join him and his son Jay on a recent harvesting trip.
Okay, I think we're ready to go get some fuel.
So with the fuel and everything, how much does a trip like this cost you?
I don't know, over $200, easy.
Yeah.
Just to get out on the boat, but it's worth it.
That includes engine repairs and two trips out to Middle Island. Miller says it's worth it because he'll end up feeding at least a dozen people. But within minutes, I learn he has deeper reasons for the practice. Jay explains.
I think the first time I went out was when I was 6 years old.
Do you remember that bad experience, what that was like?
Yeah, with my Uncle Eli, my dad's brother.
The yellow buoy that's on there is my brother's buoy. My brother's been passed away now for 10 years. Yeah, he was 5 years older than me. We used to do this together, and that's the last of the gear that he had that he used.
As we pull into a cove on the backside of Middle Island, the water abruptly changes from deep blue to milky aqua. That's what happens when you add a whole lot of fish sperm, or milt, into the mix.
So it's still spawning in here.
The shallow water is speckled with plastic bottles and milk jugs, all tied to submerged hemlock branches, and a handful of those have Miller written on them in bold black Sharpie ink. He says people have stolen his sets in the past, which he says isn't unusual when branches are left unsupervised overnight to gather eggs. As a result, he's mildly apprehensive around other fishermen.
He's probably just staring me down because he doesn't know who I am. But I'm going to let him get a good look at me because, you know what, I live here all my life, my whole life.
Miller has a way of diffusing the tension.
Hey, are you taking my sets? You guys look like you got a good set in. Okay, it's coming up on your side. Right there, right there, right there.
Jay grabs a milk jug attached to his Uncle Eli's yellow buoy. He clutches the trailing thick rope. Using all of his body weight, he wrestles the egg-laden branch to the surface.
Get it to where you got some leverage, because I'm going to pull it. Is it moving? It's probably super heavy.
When it's ready to harvest, a branch can weigh well over 400 pounds.
So what we do is we clip off pieces of it to get it in the boat. Holy smokes. Oh, yeah. That's a good one right there.
Miller hoists the dripping branch into the boat. It's coated with eggs and looks like it was dipped in a vat of rubber cement.
See, this is the thickness you want. Some people get them just a little bit thicker, and that's good too, but not much more than that. That's too thick.
It's a bountiful harvest, which, according to Miller, is thanks to his brother's buoy.
It's my good luck buoy, and usually every year that's the one that produces quite a bit. It's like my brother's looking out for us.
He tosses the leftover branch overboard.
Sheesh! Thank you. Use the tree to help us. Thank the tree for helping us.
Take away the powerboat, the plastic milk jug buoys, and it isn't difficult to picture this practice taking place long before Western and Native cultures met.
If I don't start sharing what I know right away, you know, I might not be here tomorrow.
When we return to A&B Harbor and pull into stall 10, I realize that gathering herring eggs on hemlock branches is an expression of gratitude. Gratitude for the teachings of his ancestors, gratitude for food, and the chance to pass on this way of life. In Sitka, I'm Emily Foreman.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by Alaska Pipeline Service Company, committed to safety, operating the 800-mile Trans-Alaska Pipeline since 1977. Alaska Premier Dental Group, providing full-service dental care for the entire family with three offices, two in Anchorage and one in Wasilla. Service information at smilealaska.com. And by BP Alaska. As part of their commitment to Alaska, BP and their employees are investing in over 400 education and service organizations in communities across the state. More at alaska.bp.com.
Ketchikan,
Kotzebue,
Dillingham,
Sitka,
Chugiak,
Fairbanks,
Fort Yukon,
Wrangell,
Barrow,
Unalaska, Dutch Harbor,
Alaknarechamut.
This is AK on Alaska News Nightly. I'm Matt Miller. This week on AK, Book Club. Several people at Juneau's downtown shelter and soup kitchen, The Glory Hole, are part of a new club. Every Tuesday, they come together on the second floor of the facility to discuss a different topic. As KTOO's Lisa Fu reports, the club is helping to build a community within the homeless shelter, one not based on need, but on the exchange of ideas.
Our theme for this week was the space program. Does anybody have memories of some of the more original space stuff that started to go on John, in like the 60s.
When John Glenn first walked on the moon, it was almost midnight.
John Glenn didn't walk on the moon.
Or whoever. The
it's called the Glory Hole Book Club, but it's really more of a discussion group. Instead of everyone reading the same book, community outreach librarian Andrea Hirsch says there's a theme that everyone comes prepared to talk about each week.
The very first day, like everybody was here, wrote down 5 ideas of stuff that they thought would be so neat to talk about, and we threw them in a hat, and then we pulled it out, and it works really well because it makes it open to anybody who wants to come.
Topics range from philosophy to fantasy. Hirsch says book club members can relate the topic to an article they may have read or a movie they watched. Oftentimes, group discussions stem from personal experience.
We pulled like agriculture ones, and I was a little like, that one's gonna be terrible. But we talked a lot about animal husbandry and like growing crops, and most of the people here have worked in agricultural fields. It was a great topic.
6 people who have come to this club session sit in a circle of chairs. All eyes are on Hirsch as she holds up the book, Packing for Mars. Hirsch talks about a test performed on wannabe astronauts.
They have like 8 candidates and they keep them all in one room and they're monitored 24/7. They have no privacy and they can't leave each other because they're simulating like what's going on in the International Space Station.
The Glory Hole Book Club was a test as well, when the shelter paired up with Juneau Public Libraries to try something new. Maria Lovashuk is director of the shelter.
I did not think that the Glory Hole Book Club would be a very successful activity, but I think it's really wonderful for people to have an opportunity to not think about the fact that they're homeless and that they're struggling and they need to get out of the situation.
Club member Sheila Higgins was a psychic for 25 years out of Fairbanks in Anchorage. She also spent time working on the North Slope. When she moved to Juneau in 2012 for a different job, things didn't work out. She's lived at the Glory Hole for about a year. Since the club started in January, Higgins has gone to every session. She says those that attend have become closer.
I think we get to know each other on a different level. We don't see, you know, ourselves as homeless people. Here we just see each other as brother and sister.
The book club also adds another dimension to the Glory Hole. Most of the action takes place in the day room on the first floor, where all the meals are served.
That's kind of their forum down there. The people who run the place up here, it's ours. Okay? It's ours. This is our club.
Higgins says club members freely share their opinions and listen. After several weeks of this, Higgins says they've grown to respect and support one another.
Nobody's here because they want to be. You know, we'd all rather be in our own homes, you know, living different lives. But as long as we're here, we're going to do the best we can for each other.
Kid Perez says the book club is also just fun.
It's spontaneous for sure, and it's just a tight-knit group, and we all are acquainted well enough here to just let it go, you know, let it ride, and you can comment and say pretty much what you think. It gets kind of crazy sometimes, but that's part of the fun.
Perez is an auto mechanic. He says he goes where the money is. With summer approaching, he has hopes of moving out of the shelter.
Could be sometime this month because the season's coming around and that means more work, you know, for a lot of people at this time of year. So we'll see what happens.
As long as Perez is at the Glory Hole, though, he'll continue going to the club. As the session on the space program wraps up, Hirsch holds out the book club hat.
Why don't you pick out our topic for next week?
Cartoons would be nice. Oh,
wow. Psychology.
Chatter and laughter break out among the club members as they get up to leave, their minds already on next week's club theme. In Juneau, I'm Lisa Fu.
Now it's time for 300 Villages. This week we're heading to Moose Creek, a village of about 600 people in central Alaska.
My name is Jeff Jacobson. I'm the Chief of Staff for the Fairbanks North Star Borough. Moose Creek is a small neighborhood community. It was primarily developed many decades ago as a residential community for individuals that either were active military duty personnel or were civilian workers. And it is just situated right off the Richardson Highway, about 15 miles south of Fairbanks and about 1 mile from the gate on Alston Air Force Base. There is a recreational site right across the highway from Moose Creek, which is a Moose Creek lake or pond where it's very popular in the summertime. And then also farther down that road is the Allison Farm Road Agriculture Development, where a lot of the interior Alaska produce is grown. Those farmers produce anything from hay to potatoes, different kinds of grains, and I think peonies are becoming another popular crop. There's also a bison ranch in that area. It borders the Chena Lakes recreational area, and so there is also large swimming areas for recreational swimming and non-motorized boating. It also has access to the flood Tana River flood channel, so it's great for bicycling, off-road vehicles, snow machining, dog mushing. It's also connected to a lot of the different trail systems in the area, so for recreational purposes, a lot of people, you know, use that as a way to enjoy both winter and summertime activities using either snow machines, dog sleds, or ATV bicycles. It has some really fun street names such as Denise and Denefew and Go That Away. So people obviously have a sense of humor when they're naming some of their neighborhood streets. I wouldn't consider them a very close-knit community just because they don't have a community center. They used to have a school, but that hasn't been in operation for many years. So I think they're more of a bedroom community to the larger areas.
Jeff Jacobson is the chief of staff for the Fairbanks North Star Borough. 300 Villages is AK's attempt to put every community in Alaska on the radio. If you want to hear your community featured, send an email to news@alaskapublic.org. Thanks for listening to AK this week. We had help from Lisa Fu, Jolene Almendardes, Annie Feit, and Dave Waldron. Tune in next week for more unique stories from around the state. I'm Matt Miller.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at alaskapublic.org, and you can follow us on Twitter at APRN. We had reports tonight from Philip Manning in Talkeetna, Dan Bross in Fairbanks, and Emily Foreman in Sitka. Matt Miller was our AK guest host this week. APRN's Alexandra Gutierrez reported from Juneau, Liz Ruskin from Washington, D.C., and Jolene Almendarez from Anchorage. Our editor and producer is Annie Feit. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron. Josh Edge is our web producer, and I'm Lori Townsend. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
Get away and stay in AK at UAS Juneau. Small enough that your professors know you by name, big enough for a vibrant campus community with a new residence hall opening fall of 2014. This message sponsored by the University of Alaska Southeast. Salmon aren't just another fish in Alaska. They're our lifeblood, a source of food, rich tradition, jobs, businesses, and community. They're as resilient as Alaskans themselves and as creative and resourceful, too. At salmonlove.com, you'll find a site dedicated to Alaskans' connection with our state's most famed fish. Enjoy stories, tips, fun, and lots of other salmon-y goodness, too. Salmonlove.com. This message brought to you by the Salmon Project. Enjoy a lunchtime talk with Dennis Hayes, CEO of the world's most energy-efficient commercial building, on Thursday, May 1st, during the 6th Annual Business of Clean Energy in Alaska Conference at the Dena Center. Individual tickets for this keynote luncheon can be purchased at bceaconference.com or 929-7770. Clean energy, it's everyone's business. This message sponsored by REAP.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.